bit. Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday 10 till 12.
Adam Carr is a sophologist, a regular commentator for this program during this election. He joins us on the phone this morning. Adam, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you. Is this plebiscite a farce and a sham?
Well, I've always thought so, yes. In relation to what you just said, it's always been clear that the plebiscite would not be binding. It's not like a referendum. It doesn't change the law. It's just an expression of opinion. And members of parliament will still be free to vote for or against as they see fit. And Eric Abetz said that on day one. So this is not really news, but it's Turnbull's difficulty explaining what the purpose of the plebiscite is, because it was Tony Abbott's idea, not his.
Sure.
He's stuck with it. It is a completely meaningless exercise, yes.
Adam, after we wade our way through the first four pages or five pages of Today's Age and the Brexit domination of the newspaper, page six, the Liberals' Plan B on gay marriage, a piece written by Mark Kinney, chief political correspondent, says a secret push is underway in the Coalition's party room to hobble any positive public vote in favour of same-sex marriage equality by giving Conservatives MP and senators express permission to vote in Parliament against reform if their individual electorates had voted in the majority for no.
Well, they've always had that. I'm a bit puzzled by that story. Anybody who thought the plebiscite was ever going to be binding on members doesn't understand how Parliament works.
Well, correct.
You can't bind MPs to vote. The Liberal Party could adopt it as Liberal Party policy, as Labor does. Labor candidates sign a pledge that they will always vote as the caucus decides, and if they don't, they can get expelled from the party. But you can't legally force a member of parliament to vote for or against anything. And Eric Abetz said this the day the plebiscite was first floated by Abbott. He said, "I will vote as I see fit, regardless of the plebiscite," and that's always been the position.
Adam, Kirsty Marshall here. You say it's been very clear that it's not binding.
Well, then, not to everyone, obviously.
Obviously, and that comes down to, at the end of the day, marketing. But I'm still trying to rack my brain as to what is the purpose of a plebiscite other than to know, obviously, the way the general public feel about an issue when we're really looking at the amount of money that it costs to find that out.
Yes, yes.
I just don't entirely understand that, because I think that there should be more legislation supporting it to ensure that what the general public do vote for is therefore enforceable.
That's just not possible. You could pass an Act of Parliament saying if the plebiscite produces a yes vote, then members of Parliament must vote for it. That's just invalid. It just can't happen. You can't bind members of Parliament to vote. I think the original purpose of the plebiscite, as far as Abbott was concerned, was just to kick the whole issue down the road a while, so that to take the heat off the fact that the Liberal Party members weren't allowed to have a conscience vote. It was designed to appease, members like Kelly O'Dwyer and others who would vote for marriage equality if there was a vote, if there was a free vote, to sort of throw them a bone and say, keep quiet and we'll fix this later. And Turnbull has inherited this, just in the same way that Howard inherited the Republic referendum from Alexander Downer, you may remember. The motive was the same, to try and flick the issue down the road so that we don't have to deal with it right now.
Well, and I also feel that whilst this has unnecessarily dragged this matter out, it is a greater umbrella about this is the way in which politicians are viewed, the trust that we have in them. We are, I think generally speaking, tired of having one thing said prior to an election, prior to a decision being made, prior to somebody being put into the position of power, and then changing that position afterwards. And we want to know that what a position that is taken by a political party or an individual is consistent through their term.
Well, good luck with that. you can see in the very high vote in the opinion polls for others at the moment, the level of distrust there is. And the Brexit referendum was another example, and the rise of Donald Trump. And you can see this all across the democratic world. is that the traditional two-party system is breaking down. Traditional trust in blind loyalty to political parties is breaking down. More and more people are looking for alternatives, some of them good, some of them bad. And you know, opportunists, populist demagogues leap into this gap that's opening up between the political system and the electorate. You know, we're going to see a very high vote for people like Nick Xenophon and David Lionhelm and all sorts of Ricky Muir and all sorts of people who fluke their way into politics. But their rise is based on increasing cynicism and distrust about politicians, which arises from, as you say, decades of broken promises and cynical promises and evasion of difficult issues like this one. And that's the consequence.
It's almost giving to me the idea that there is an opportunity. Whilst you want the independence, but you also want the collective power of the independence, that there is some sort of unification within all of those independents across Australia and within the state to create a political party that's really about real politics with real politicians.
Democracy.
With no association to any particular party, but that they are able to... I guess, work together to highlight what you are voting for as an individual as just a party.
The problem with that is that once they become a political party, then they become part of the system.
No, I'm talking about unified marketing in raising their individual profiles, not in actually their political views being unified.
Well, I guess that's possible. I mean, we used to have a party, the Australian Democrats, who used to trade on their reputation of keeping the bastards honest.
Mm.
And then Meg Lees did her deal with Howard to pass the GST, and the Democrats fell apart.
But even before we saw the defection of the leader to the Labor Party because she was romantically involved with I think it was Gareth.
That's right. Yes. Yes, that's correct. Yeah. So, and the Greens, obviously, at the moment, are the beneficiaries of a lot of that.
You can't keep the bastards honest when you're in the cot with them, I think was my point. Hey, Adam, let's move away from this plebiscite for a moment and look at another piece in Today's Age where Bill Shorten has left open the possibility of Labor doing a bit of a deal with some independents if the party wins enough votes to form a minority government. I sort of want to remind our audience that under the Gillard minority government, we saw more legislation put through the parliament than in any time in our sort of recent history. So there is something to be said for a democracy in action when we do have a hung parliament and those crossbenchers, of which there appears to be more coming, will actually be able to affect real change. Do you think that's a fair assumption?
Well, it depends on who the crossbenchers are. The Gillard government was lucky to have Tony Windsor, who was, I think...
Well, let's hope he's back.
Of enormous integrity and good judgment, but there can be bad independents as well. You know, if a government is dependent on Bob Katter, that won't be as good. So the opinion polls are very close at the moment. Sorry,
he'll just go out and threaten to shoot them. We've seen his ads.
I think a hung parliament is looking like a real possibility. If I had to make a prediction at the moment, I think Labor might win 8, 10, possibly 12 seats. We might pick up a Xenophon member or two in South Australia. The Greens are looking a good prospect to win Higgins, possibly. Windsor
also,
and O'Shot.
There's also talk of Batman and Melbourne Ports falling to the Greens.
Well, since the Liberals decided to not to preference the Greens, I think the Greens' prospects in Batman and Wills have receded. Batman is still a possibility, but not as strong as it was before. I think the Greens' best prospect in Victoria is Higgins.
Yeah.
And Windsor and Oakeshott are both polling quite well. There was a poll showing Oakeshott 50-50 with the Nationals in his electorate. So we could get an increased crossbench. At the moment, there's four. Since Clive Palmer has disappeared, we've got four. We could easily get five, six, seven, perhaps. If Labor can win 10 seats from the coalition, that could produce a hung parliament. So that's... The politicians' thoughts are turning to how a hung parliament would work.
Adam, there's also another thought that Turnbull is in trouble. If he has a reduced majority as a result of this election, there is the suggestion that he gets elected with maybe a 4 or 5 seat majority, and within time he's rolled with Scott Morrison chomping at the bit to take the PM's job because he's ferociously ambitious. That spells some sense of disaster. Option B is that there is a hung parliament with a minority government and a whole bunch of crossbenchers, or C, that Labor might just pinch this. And we saw all the polling leading up to Brexit that Remain was very much in favour. Kirsty alluded to before there was sort of 10% of voters that were swinging. I think we've got the same amount of swinging voters, and I wonder if there is enough of those people who are as yet undecided that could swing this election to shorten and surprise us all.
Well, that's possible. There are two things to say about that. The other thing the Brexit referendum showed us is how unreliable opinion polling is getting.
Correct.
For various social and technological reasons, it's becoming more difficult to poll voters. More and more people have mobile phones, don't answer their phones. It's impossible to tell what electorate the mobile phone is in unless you have some other data for them. You know, we all used to have 03 in front of our phone numbers. We don't anymore. Polls, you shouldn't put too much trust in opinion polls, but it's certainly possible that there is still a large undecided number of voters, and they will make up their minds often at the last minute. That's why we always see desperate scare campaigns in the last week of the campaign, trying to stampede those last percentages of undecided voters.
Adam, I wonder how Brexit will make us think about that in this coming week. We do have to wrap it up, mate. I'm sorry.
Listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.